And welcome back to MTG Eternities. I'm your host, Carl. And I was gone for a couple weeks now. I had a couple of finals to do, and then we have Thanksgiving and all that coming up. So I haven't had really a lot of time to do some research. But I've managed to come up with some interesting topics and some observations that have hit the community recently. So hopefully you guys enjoy this show. First and foremost, I want to talk about the three spoilers that came out for Rivals of Ixalan. And the reason I'm focusing on those and not on the new Unstable set is I've never been around for an Unstable set. I haven't played Magic for an Unstable set, so I really don't have an opinion on it just yet. The cards look fun, but outside of the full art lands and the Steam Flogger boss or whatever, you can't really play any of those cards in any format outside of Cube, to my knowledge, or some friendly commander pools. But that being said, there might be some adjustments that those cards will be made to come the full set release. So once everything gets said and done, I'll give my opinion on the full set. It does look fun, but as I've mentioned before, I believe I'm not really interested in purchasing into Unstable, but hopefully once I come back from GP Oklahoma, everything will look nice and I'll have a little bit extra cash on me and I can buy some Unstable sets or some Iconic Masters, something to that equivalence. So hopping back on track, I want to focus on the Rivals of Ixalan preview. Now, if you haven't paid attention, there are three new cards that they premiered over the last couple of days, and they've kind of snuck them in there with the Unstable spoilers. So every now and then, if you don't look, they'll put a Rivals of Ixalan card in there, and you might mistake it for an Unstable spoiler if you don't pay attention to the set icon. So the three that they have revealed, I'm going to kind of go in order. The first one, of course, is Storm the Vault. It is a 4-drop enchantment, 2 colorless, 1 blue, 1 red. Whenever one or more creatures you control deals combat damage, create a treasure token. And then at the beginning of your end step, if you control 5 or more artifacts, you flip it. So the flip side, of course, is add any color of mana to your mana pool, or its second ability is add 1 blue mana for each artifact you control. Now, this is very reminiscent of a card that's banned in EDH, that's banned in Legacy, and is arguably one of the most powerful lands of all time, and that is Tolarian Academy. The difference here, of course, though, is this is a very slow Tolarian Academy. At turn 4, you're going to be a little hard-pressed to find a need for all that extra mana, of course. But they may print something that could make use of it. In fact, I'm kind of thinking that the Gearhulks might be able to make use of this card if the Gearhulks start to make a larger presence in Standard than just Torrential Gearhulk, of course, and Verdant Gearhulk. I'm also thinking Metal Gear Colossus might be an easy way for that card to be ramped out to with this card, of course. But that being said, there are some adjustments to be made. Now, a lot of people are wondering why they didn't make this blue-white or blue-black or something, and the obvious statement here is for Commander purposes, they didn't want to give any of the Esper decks really an additional kicker, so they put this in where artifacts aren't going to be as big, and that of course is into Izzet. Now with Izzet you're going to have a lot of Storm cards, but you're not going to really have an artifact deck per se, and that's not to say that there aren't artifact decks in EDH that are Izzet colors, but they're not as prevalent as say Shroom the Hedgemond or something like that. Now in theory you could of course put this into a 4-color EDH deck that focuses around artifacts like in Brea. I think that card will fit in here nicely, but outside of that it's going to be hard pressed. Storm the Vault might make its way into Standard, but I'm looking more along the lines of more or less EDH. I think that's pretty much its home. I think it's too slow for Modern, which is ironic considering that Affinity, its two main colors that it puts in the deck for Modern are blue and red, but you're not going to see Affinity play this, at least to my knowledge. As an Affinity player myself, I look at this card and go, it's cool, I wish it was one drop less, or it's a bit too slow for what I need. It's not a bad card in the slightest, and if you get a foil one of these in your pre-release, it's probably be worth a pretty penny, but that being said, it's not going to be something that I'm dire to see happen. Moving on to the next card that was premiered, Tetsamok, Death Primordial. Now, there are a couple of odd things about this card that strike me, and the first one, of course, is it is a legendary creature, Elder Dinosaur. That's great. I think we're going to have a cycle of 5 Elder Dinosaurs. The issue here is that it's the only black dinosaur, to my knowledge, that we have. So you can't really build an EDH deck around this. And unless we get a 5-color dino that's also legendary, you can't really put this into, again, a dinosaur tribal deck. But that's just for EDH purposes, of course. Now, looking at this from a Standard perspective, I think this card is absolutely insane. Draft and Sealed can be said the exact same thing. And why you may be wondering, why is Tetsamok Death Primordial insane? Well, it is a 6-drop, 4 colorless, 2 black. It has a 6-6 death touch. So right there, it already has the stats and a special ability that make people afraid of it, especially in draft, sealed, standard. It's a way to deal with Carnage Tyrant. It's a way to deal with anything that doesn't have indestructible. Another kicker is you pay 1 black and you reveal Tetsumok Death Primordial from your hand, and then you may put a prey counter on target creature. You can only activate that ability during your turn. So that is a key thing to note there, is you can only do that during your turn. You can't go into turn on your opponent's turn, just flap up 5 mana and just start putting prey counters on everything. But the second keyword to Tetsumok is when it enters the battlefield, destroy all creatures with prey counters on them. So already it's going to be able to 2-for-1, 3-for-1 your opponent if you have extra mana and you don't have anything to do during your turn. You just might as well pay it into Tetsumok on turn 5, put prey counters on things, and then go from there. Now, I am really enjoying Tetsumok. Again, as I mentioned, I think it's going to be a draft bomb. I think it's going to be a sealed bomb. It might even make its way into standard in the Dimir control shell or the Dimir mid-range shell. Even a Grixis shell might play this card. It is a great finisher. I don't think it's going to be too expensive, and as I mentioned before, it's a great way to deal with Carnage Tyrant, and it's a great way to deal with a lot of creatures that do not have Indestructible right now. Now, as I mentioned before, my only two issues with the card is, one, it's a black dinosaur, so you can't really put it into an EDH Dino Tribal just yet. And two, this is probably a petty reason, but I look at this card, and I don't think at all that this is a meat-eating dinosaur. And this is just the naturalist in me, this is just the scientist in me. I'm looking at this, and it's a four-legged dinosaur with spikes all over it. Nothing immediately says that it's a meat-eating dinosaur, so the prey counters don't necessarily make sense to me, unless this thing's just rolling around on the floor like a giant death ball of spikes or something, defending its territory. But again, that's just like the scientist in me. I can't really think of any four-legged dinosaur in our past that might have eaten meat per se. Now, that's not to say that it hasn't happened, and it's not to say that there's some dinosaurs that I'm just forgetting, but it's just one of those funny things. At that same token, I really do love this artwork, and it kind of reminds me of Anguera from Godzilla, and I don't know if anyone remembers that, unless you're a movie buff, but that is the Godzilla's kind of like sidekick slash best friend on occasion. That's the spiked armadillo-like creature that almost looks like this card, and it has spikes on it, it rolls around, it Godzilla steps on it, he gets hurt, he kicks it like a soccer ball, and that's kind of what this card reminds me of. I will say I look forward to this card, and if I see it in draft, unless there's something else, I think this is honestly a first pick in draft, and it's definitely a good card to first pick in my opinion. Now the final card I want to touch on, and maybe some people have seen it, that is the Immortal Suns, and that is 6 generic legendary artifact. Now, we all kind of expected this to be a card, and there are already some speculations on where this came from, and you might be wondering what the Immortal Sun does. Well, as I mentioned, it is a 6 generic legendary artifact. The first thing is, players cannot activate loyalty abilities of planeswalkers. We have not seen an ability like this in standard thus far, in EDH thus far, anywhere. So this card already is going to be worth quite a bit just for that ability. The second ability on this card is, at the beginning of your upkeep, draw an additional card. So it doesn't just lock down planeswalkers, you get to draw another card per turn. It also reduces spells by 1 generic less to cast. So the key word there is spells. It's not just going to lower creatures, but it's also going to lower artifacts, instant sorceries, enchantments, so on and so forth. Even if you want to play your own planeswalkers, it lowers them. But you got to keep in mind that it locks down all planeswalkers, not just your opponents. But that being said, for those two abilities already on that, with the addition of locking down planeswalkers, it's already worth the 6 generic. But it even has one more ability, and that's, I think it's probably just something tacked on there, but that is creatures you control get +1/+1. So it gives an anthem effect as well, which is fantastic. I do think if you get a foil one of these cards, they're going to be worth a little bit, and people are already saying it's an EDH staple. I don't think it's a staple unless you're building certain kind of decks. I think certain players are going to want these cards, especially if Super Friends is very popular in their area. But that aside, I do think that this card is very good. Now, aside from that, I don't think it's going to have any impact in Modern. I don't think it's going to have impact in Standard. We aren't seeing Super Friends decks there. I don't even think we're going to see impact in Legacy or Vintage from this card. So I do think it's going to be almost EDH exclusive. Now, that's not to say that there won't be a surprise down the line, but that's where I expect to see this card being played, is just EDH. I don't think this thing's going to carry a heavy price tag, of course, unless you have the foil version. I think you're probably going to be looking at $5 at the most for this card, $10. Unless, of course, that is the foil version, because let's be honest, all EDH players love their foils. Now, out of these three cards that we've seen so far, I guarantee Tetsamok, Death Primordial is the most standard playable. Outside of that, Storm the Vault and the Immortal Suns, I don't think they're standard playable. They aren't really modern playable, legacy playable. Those two are almost EDH exclusive, at least in my perspective. That's not to say Storm the Vaults could make a splash in standard again. If you are able to flip it soon enough, you can get a crap ton of mana and cast Metalwork Colossus or cast some of the Gear Hulks or something like that, especially if you're running treasure variants. But right now we need a large X spell outside of Battle at the Bridge to work with this card. And for that to happen, we need to see more spoilers for Ixalan. Now that being said, out of the gate with these three cards, I'm ecstatic with the Rivals of Ixalan spoilers, and I can't wait to see what else Rivals has for us, especially considering the Immortal Suns was the third spoiler. I didn't expect to see that card until, I don't know, week one of official spoiler season or week two. So moving on from our spoilers for Rivals of Ixalan, I want to touch on the four GPs that have happened over the last 2 weeks. We have GP Shanghai, GP Atlanta, GP Warsaw, and GP Portland. Of those four GPs, I do have the top eights. They're pretty easy, and I'm sure everyone's looked at the top eight, top 16 list by now. But I kind of want to go over them a little bit. There were some odd things, in my opinion, that I want to touch upon. So first off, we're going to start with GP Shanghai. The top eight in order from first to eighth, we have Timur Energy, Ramunap Red, Grixis Thopters, Ramunap Red, four color energy, two more Ramunap Reds, followed up by a Timur Energy. So there wasn't a big change from that GP compared to the Pro Tour. The decks, like I mentioned last week, are now fully established, and the only thing hindering any development from the top eight right now is a ban, and I don't think we're going to see a ban, honestly, in this standard format. It's a bit hard-pressed, especially considering what's topping right now, and you'll notice a pattern. So moving on to GP Atlanta, and just keep this pattern in mind, folks, but GP Atlanta, again, first to eighth, you have Esper Approach, Desert Red, four color energy, Mardu Vehicles, four color energy, Ramunap Red, and Timur Energy. So you see a lot of what you've already seen in GP Shanghai appearing at GP Atlanta. And the biggest asterisk, I guess, in GP Atlanta, of course, is Desert Red. You might be wondering, well, why is this Desert Red not Ramunap Red? Well, they're not using the Kenra, they're not using the two drop in that variant. They're using more deserts to get as much bang for their buck with creatures like Sand Strangler. When that creature comes into play, if there's a desert in the grave or a desert on the battlefield under your control, it deals 3 damage to target creature or player. It effectively becomes another burn spell, especially late game. You see cards like that being relatively good. It's also utilizing Rampaging Ferocidon to the best of its ability, making sure your opponents can gain life, and then you're dealing them more damage every time more creatures come to play, so on and so forth. Outside of that variant of red, most of the decks, of course, remain the same at GP Lana as it was in GP Shanghai. And you'll notice GP Warsaw is next, of course, and again, 1st through 8th, we're going to see a lot of the same thing. You have 4 color energy, Timur energy, 4 color energy, Sultai energy, followed by another 4 color energy, followed up by Mardu vehicles, then there's a blue-green Pummeler deck, and then a blue-white God Pharaoh's Gift deck. Outside of those bottom 3, most of those decks have appeared before, especially in the top 8. If you dig further down, they've appeared in the top 16 of all those tournaments. So the final thing I want to touch on is GP Portland. Again, same format, 1st through 8th. Timur Energy, Ramunap Red, Ramunap Red, Red-Green Pummeler, 4-Color Energy, Ramunap Red, Timur Energy, and Timur Energy. Now, I made this note last time I made a podcast, and I'm going to mention it here. Nowhere do you see Dimir Control or Grixis Control in those top 8. Now, if we delve even further, looking into the top 16 of each of those tournaments, Blue-Black Control is nowhere in those top 16. The closest we get is GP Shanghai with a Blue-Black mid-range deck. So, it's unfortunate, but it's kind of safe to say Blue-Black Control has now fallen off top-tier status, and it has become second-tier almost, maybe tier 1.5. Why this is hard to say. You can blame a lot of the Hexproof, you can blame a lot of people knowing the meta, and a lot of people are prepared for Blue-Black. Considering that it is the best control deck that we have in format, it's easy to prepare against it since it is the only control deck. And that's not to say that other control decks aren't really popping up. You do have Esper Approach showing up in the top 8 at GP Atlanta. You have Blue White God Pharaoh's Gift showing up at the GP Warsaw. But there's not much of a showing as it is with the other aggro decks. You have different variants of Timur aggro, different variants of red deck wins. You have different variants of 4-color energy all showing up in the top 8 of those tournaments. And that doesn't leave much room for control to kind of seize the moment, unfortunately. So aggro is in a really good spot right now. And it's going to be even in a better spot upon rotation. Yes, we'll lose out on a lot of the red aggro and Timur aggro and 4-color energy are all going to go bye-bye. But aggro is really easy to build up. For a good control deck to remain in format, a lot of the pieces either A, need to remain, or B, have to already exist for those decks to kind of have a foothold. And we're going to lose a lot upon rotation. And granted, rotation's still a little bit ways away, but it's just something that I have in the back of my mind, and I'm thinking, oh, rotation's this far, rotation's that far. We gotta keep that going, otherwise that train's gonna hit us, and then all of a sudden, my deck's gone, along with all these other decks. So if you're currently sitting on a lot of stuff right now, it's best to start maybe moving some of that product, because you are gonna see some of that product dipping. At least in my opinion, once Rivals hits, the format's gonna change again, and some product's gonna spike up, some product's gonna spike down. And then I believe after Rivals, we have the new core set. And it's not until after the new core set happens that we get Dominaria. And once Dominaria happens, I believe we have our first rotation. I could be wrong on that exact timing. I need to look the timing up again. But it is coming. So once we have Rivals enter format, of course, we're going to have another jumble mess in Standard. And decks are going to move to the top and move to the bottom. But I would start picking up Ixalan and Rival pieces. I think Core is going to make Tribal a bit stronger because they're going to need to reinforce Rivals, and they're going to need to reinforce what comes out in Dominaria because we're going to lose a huge portion of our current meta upon rotation. As I mentioned before, Timur's going to go down the drain, Energy is going to go down the drain, Ramenop's going to no longer exist, all the approach decks are out, Mardu Vehicles is gone. The whole meta right now is just saturated with decks from Kaladesh, with sprinkles, and I mean sprinkles, of Amonkhet. From Amonkhet, you really only see approach decks, God Pharaoh gift decks, and Ramenop red decks. Or I'm just going to call them desert decks at this point. With Kaladesh, you're still seeing Timur Energy, you're going to see Sultai, you're going to see Golgari. All those decks currently exist, built off of the backs of Kaladesh, built off the backs of Amonkhet. So once the rotation happens, we're going to start to see Tribal rise. And out of Ixalan right now, I'm not seeing a heck of a lot of ways for control to take back the meta as it needs to. And we're going to lose out on our late game combo decks. And I do consider Esper Approach a combo deck, and I do consider God Pharaoh's Gift its own combo decks. Even if they have control aspects, you're comboing off of Approach of the Second Sun, or you're using God Pharaoh's Gift to just get super value. And that's usually what combo decks like to do, is they like to get super value for their cards, putting out a God Pharaoh's Gift turn 4, or they like to win off of the back of one card. And that's what you see with Esper Approach. As to what deck will take the place of these upon rotation, and again, it's probably a little bit early to say, but I am looking at it. I'm not leaning towards anything in particular right now, but I do want to say that Dinosaurs is looking really good. I don't think Pirates is there. I think Vampires is going to have a little bit to say. And Dominaria did have a lot of Merfolk on that, and I do believe that there were Vampires on Dominaria. So we are going to see that Merfolk and Vampires, once we go to Dominaria, are going to get additional kickbacks from that. So Dinosaurs might not be the best thing to invest in, as Pirates might not be the best thing to invest in, per se, once rotation happens. But again, that's all just speculation. I could be wrong, I've been wrong in the past before, and I'll admit when I'm wrong. But those are just my general thoughts on what has happened over the last couple weeks with the GPs. Now, we've done deck techs in the past, and considering that a majority of these decks I've gone over, I kind of want to hit something new as I try to hit every week. And so the first deck that popped up to me was the deck from GP Shanghai with Grixis Thopters. Again, you're going to lose most of this deck on rotation, but I think it's worth a shot in most standard metas. So you're going to look at 25 lands to start. Your 25 lands are 4 Aether Hubs, 2 Fetid Pools, 1 Field of Ruins, 2 Inventor's Fair, 5 Island, 3 Mountain, 4 Spires of Industry, and 4 Spire Bluff Canal. Now, it's important to keep all these cards, of course, together. You're going to need them, because the monopole is so spread out since it's Grixis that every one of these cards is super important to have, and the fast lands are by no means cheap right now. A lot of decks are using them and they've made their way into Modern as we expected the fast lands too, of course. So if you have the chance to pick up the fast lands, I would say do it while they're cheap because upon rotation they're just going to keep spiking up in price. Moving on to the creature package of this deck, you have 14 creatures. You're going to have 4 Aether Swooper, and if you're not familiar with that, it is a 1 colorless, 1 blue, 1/2 flyer. When it enters the battlefield, you get 2 energy, and then whenever it attacks, you pay 2 energy and you get a Thopter. And that's going to be the ongoing theme with this deck, is almost everything in the deck generates more Thopters. As we see with Maverick Thopterus, which is again a 5-drop this time, which is 3 colorless, 1 blue, 1 red, 2/2 with Improvise. Whenever you want to try to cast this thing, you can tap artifacts to improvise it out to make it cheaper, and then when it enters the battlefield, it's going to generate 2 Thopters. You're going to have 1 Pia Nalar, again she generates a Thopter, and then you could sacrifice an artifact to make creatures not block, or you could pump up artifacts. You're running 1 Scarab God just for value purposes. That's the main reason why this thing's in Grixis. If your creatures that generate Thopters die, you can bring them back stronger and they enter the battlefield with more Thopters, or you can just pay energy to make them have more Thopters. And then the final card in this deck is a 4 of Whirler Virtuoso, which is seeing play in Timur Energy and a lot of other decks right now. I believe most people are familiar with Whirler Virtuoso right now, so I'm not going to go over that. So as you see, every card in the deck, with the exception of Scarab God, of course, generates Thopters upon entering the battlefield or upon spending energy, which is the point. Because now you're going to look at the instance and sorcery package. You're running 3 Harness Lightning, so again, more ways to get energy and generate more Thopters, 2 Magma Sprays as additional removal, Metallic Rebuke as a cheap form of counter, and 2 Reverse Engineer, which is again an improvise. You tap X amount of artifacts, you tap 2 blue or 1 blue, whatever you need to, and then you draw 3 cards. It is sorcery speed, so it's not the best. I still personally prefer Glimmer over this, but for this particular build, the improvise worked rather nicely. And then it's running 11 other spells. It's running a 1 of Aether Sphere Harvester just as a way to gain life against the Ramunap Red matchup, 1 Chandra Torch Defiance as an alternate win con, 4 Deconation Modules, which is a 2 colorless. Whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, you gain an energy, and then you pay 4 colorless and you tap it and you return target creature you control to its owner's hand. So as long as you don't exile something with the Scarab God and make it a token, you're going to be able to return a lot of the creatures that you put onto the battlefield back to your hand and use their enter the battlefield effects again. So you keep returning Maverick Thopterus to your hand, and then it generates more energy because when it enters the battlefield, it puts out 3 bodies for the price of 1, and it generates 3 energy. So then you have Whirler Virtuoso on the battlefield, uses those 3 energy to generate more Thopters, so on and so forth. It's a great way to have utility and keep on returning your enter the battlefield creatures back to hand. It's also a good way to save your creatures, let's say like from a wrath effect. So should your opponent try to kill your Scarab God, you could always return your Scarab God back to your hand or something like that. And I mean like with a Settle the Wreckage or Magma Spray, of course, just ways to exile the Scarab God or ways to deal with the rest of your field. This card is very handy if you need it. Then you're of course running 4 of Inventor's Goggles. And if you're not familiar with this card, it is kind of a draft staple in Kaladesh, and I was kind of surprised when I saw it here, but this person was running 4 of Inventor's Goggles, which is 1 colorless, and then the equipped creature gets +1/+2. Whenever an artificer enters the battlefield, you may attach the Inventor's Goggles to them. So looking back on our creature package, everything again, with the exception of the Scarab God, is an artificer. So you're making your creatures stronger just by placing more Inventor's Goggles out there. Plus, it's going to make your improvised creatures cheaper. It's going to do a lot of things for you in the long run. And then the final card that this deck was running was a 1 of Sky Sovereign Console Flagship. And that's just another end of the battlefield card to abuse cards and to deal with planeswalkers. It also flies over Scarab Gods, it flies over Gearhulks. It's just a very good powerhouse card to have. It might be difficult to see why this card was able to take top 8, and I think it was more or less a matter of this person got there because no one really expected to see this, but that's how a lot of decks become very playable, and that's why I'm personally looking at this deck, is no one's going to be expecting to see this in our current meta. And I think it's able to get there quite easily. Especially when you look at the sideboard this person was using. This person was using 3 Abrade, 1 Battle at the Bridge, 2 Crook of Condemnation, 4 Duress, 1 additional Field of Ruin, 1 additional Metallic Rebuke, one Rivers Rebuke, and two Scrap Heap Scrounger. Now, the Scrap Heaps, of course, are there just to help power up your ships if you need them, and then just recurrable artifact creatures that are pain in the butts to deal with. Field of Ruin is there just to deal with some of the flip lands we have right now. Rivers Rebuke is there to deal with Timmer Energy, should they need it. The Crooks are there to deal with God Pharaoh's Gift, Torrential Gearhole, any deck that abuses the graveyard. Braids, again, more or less the same thing, deals with Gearhole, deals with Timmer Energy, deals with Ramunap Red. Battle of the Bridge is an alternate win condition, especially considering the card has Improvise and you're putting out all these 1-1 Thopters. The only card that's really going to stop you, of course, is a board wipe at this point with the amount of Thopters that you're placing out. But again, that's why you're running the Metallic Rebukes, is you're going to tap two Thopters. You're always going to leave Thopters behind because they're going to be Thopters that have Summoning Sickness, or they're going to be Thopters that you just don't want to swing with. So then you tap those Thopters, leave open a blue, then you Metallic Rebuke their Fumigate, or Metallic Rebuke their Settle the Wreckage, so on and so forth. The deck itself is a very fine deck. I don't think I am going to build, of course. It's a bit late in the season, and I've already established myself into the Dimir colors quite nicely. But it is something to look at, especially if you're looking at a deck to build. One that's relatively cheap, minus the Scarab God, I'd be looking at this. It is quite consistent from what I've personally playtested online. I put something together on Tapped Out and just drew a couple of cards, did some hands, and it seemed quite consistent. So, all in all, I do like the deck. Unfortunately, like I said, it's a bit late in the season for me to build, and I don't want to have to go off and find all these cards. But if you are looking at building a deck, I would look at building Grixis Thopters. So I'm going to leave this deck tech out there for you guys. If you're interested in deck teching this, let me know. Post in the comments down below. Let's see how you guys do in your local meta, or if you're going to a GP that's standard base, let's see how you guys do with Grixis Thopters. Overall, I think the deck's very solid. It's going to put out a wide net to deal with a lot of things, and it looks rather fun, to be honest. So that's going to be it for this week. If you guys have any additional thoughts, questions, comments, concerns, again, leave them in the comment section down below, or you could tweet at me at MTGEternities. You could also subscribe to me on YouTube by the same name, MTGEternities. I plan on posting a little bit there again once I go to GP Oklahoma, if you're interested in seeing how that event turns out. So just remember, all lines of thought are open for all Magic Seekers. This is your host from MTG Eternities, signing out.